Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to You Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Network. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
All right, welcome to this episode of You Talk. This is Grant Bagby from Torn by Sports. Joining me today in lieu of Joseph, who is on vacation, is Andrew Lawrence, who is also a moderator at Ute Nation, who covers the Utes for Rivals. How are you doing today, Andrew?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, excited to have you. Excited to talk some Utah football. In quick review, you know, being that you're part of the Rivals Network in Ute Nation, where the expectation is recruiting coverage. We want to hit our quick hitters, and the first one on the top of my list is the running Utes recruiting. Can you maybe go over what a couple of the big landing commits have been as of late, and just let our listeners know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been very great the last week or so with running Utes recruiting. I mean, there was a lot of worries a few months ago about what was going on and why we weren't landing some of these top end recruits. But the last week has been probably the best recruiting that Utah basketball has had, and I would even say the last couple of years. They got two big-time commitments, two four-star guys, Devontae Detrevi, who's a guard, and also Timmy Allen, who's a big-time ball player, another four-star small forward. Timmy Allen's just recently committed. He was just here on a visit over the weekend, and both these guys are going to be big-time ball players. Now, Devontae Detrevi, what's interesting about him is he's actually a 2017 recruit, so he is on campus right now, but he is going to be redshirting because it's just kind of a late addition, but he is, and he will be practicing with the team, but he will be redshirting this season. Now, Timmy Allen, he's a 2018 recruit. He will be on campus next year. Another guy that everyone's really excited about, that they're hoping is able to pull the trigger on the Utes. We should know probably within the next 5 to 6 weeks is Riley Batten, who just was on campus with Timmy Allen over the weekend. And he's got a top four of Utah, Ohio State, Vanderbilt, and Davidson. And if Utah could land him, that'd be a big time coup for Larry Kostolbiak.
Yeah, no, I mean, it'd be huge. I mean, I was along many of Ute fans who were concerned about Utah basketball recruiting and wondering what's happening. And it's a nice turn of events that we've seen. The other, quick hitter, quick review is we like to review what happened in the Pac-12 last week. First of all, Arizona crushed UTEP as expected, 63-16. Washington crushed Fresno State. Washington State crushed Oregon State. No surprises here. Colorado crushed Northern Colorado. Who's surprised? Oregon crushed Wyoming. And then you get kind of, our Utah crushed San Jose State, of course. And then you get some other more surprising scores, right? So Arizona loses by a touchdown to Texas Tech. Cal beats Ole Miss, which Cal's looking to be a much better team than I think many fans expected. And then you've got Memphis beats UCLA by 3 at the end of the game, UCLA going on the road in what everyone was kind of surprised that they took that game, and it came back to bite them. And then, San Diego State beat Stanford in what I have deemed the power outage game. I was going to watch the end of that game, and then the power went out, and I was like, yeah, I'm not interested. I went to sleep. But the thriller of the Pac-12 this last weekend was the USC-Texas game that went into OT, but was even better. I mean, Darnold with that jump pass on the money to that game-tying drive was just very impressive. And so that's kind of our review of the Pac-12, what happened last weekend. And then, of course, this morning, Wall Street Journal published an article referencing Associate Professor Ryan Brewer, who valued all the football programs in the country, and he valued the Utah program at $206,365,000. And now he adjusts that. I mean, it's mainly based off of 2016 revenue data that was available. And then he makes adjustments on growth potential and other things. I don't know the exact methods of the Mammoth, but so that's what the reference that for those who are curious, that's kind of in the lower rungs, about mid-tier for Pac-12 rankings, and then absolutely is a ton higher than BYU. You know, if you want to see more of those numbers and whatnot, you go to the Wall Street Journal. I also tweeted them out on my Twitter account, which is Grant, then TBS on Twitter. So feel free to check that out. Any other quick hitters you want to add, Andrew, before we get into our big interview?
No, I was just kind of the games from the past weekend. I'm right there with you. I mean, it was an interesting weekend. Several things stood out to me, and that is there seems to be a lot of good teams in the Pac-12 this year, but I'm not – like, it seems like it's going to be a battle. Like, it's going to be a battle for these top spots. Like, there's a lot of good teams in the Pac-12 this year, and it's going to be interesting to see who ends up making bowl eligibility. I mean, it was pretty – seeing ASU give up 52 points, like, that to me, I mean, that's terrible. I mean, for a team that is basically – for a coach who's basically hanging by a thread right now, to give up 52 points in a preseason game, I mean, that can't be happening. I'm really wondering if he even makes it to the end of the year at this point. Cal beating Ole Miss, you know, honestly, like that wasn't a big surprise to me, but I do think Cal's a little bit of a paper tiger. I mean, I know they went out and they beat North Carolina, who, in my opinion, is not a good football team. Ole Miss, with all the controversy that happened with having their coach be fired, you know, Ole Miss may end up being the worst team in their division in the SEC. So I don't really know how good a team Cal is, but it wouldn't surprise me if USC just stomps them this weekend. In fact, I'm predicting that they beat them by 21+. I don't think it's going to be close. I think Cal might be good, you know, had a good start, but I think they're going to end up being down in the rankings in the North when it's all said and done.
All right. Well, I don't think they're going to be the worst team in the North because Oregon State has that wrapped up.
That's a guarantee. They're not just. I mean, they're a bad. Oregon State's a bad football team, you know. And it's terrible to say. You know, obviously with the history of Gary Anderson, you know, with the U, but they're not a good football team, and they're definitely trending down even from last year. And it's been a disappointment to see where they've been at to start out the year.
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, the rest of this episode, we're really looking to, you know, we're going to review the San Jose State game, to what extent some hot topics going on in youth fandom right now. And we're also going to preview the Arizona game, but we're going to jump around in the order. So actually on the line with us right now is Denice. I'm sorry, Rick, I'm butchering your last name, I'm sure. But he's from... from the Arizona Desert Storm, from SB Nation, and also part of the Wildcat Radio podcast. Rick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks so much. And don't worry about my name. It happens all the time. So
I would imagine it does. Well, I mean, I'm really curious to talk to you. I mean, unfortunately, I haven't been able to watch a ton of Arizona football. And so I'm really looking to get a pulse on the Arizona program and the players and everything that we should be expecting to see this weekend. And just to start off, I'm wondering, what were the expectations for this Arizona football team coming into the season?
Well, as you guys can imagine, 3-9 season is never good. And that, you know, squarely put Rich Rod in the crosshairs of, I think, the Arizona fan base, you know, moving into this off season to kind of figure out which direction the program is going to go into and at the, you know, the base level, I think that there's a lot of excitement around our recruiting class last year. For many months, it was trending top 25. We had quite a few recruits that were, you know, high four stars to middle four star, and then some high three star recruits that ultimately dropped off the map and went to other programs. And I think the big one and that still sticks in Arizona's craw is probably Braxton Burmeister, who ended up actually going up to Oregon and is now sitting as, I believe, the second quarterback, you know, in the role. So really, when it came down to it, you know, we were banking on that recruiting class being a pretty high-ranking recruiting class coming in, and they still finished out quite well, but we did lose some key guys. So I think for Arizona, you know, it's a little finicky in terms of program support, and I think that kind of reflects the early scheduling as well. And you know, for a lot of us, I think we're sitting here looking at a 6 or 7 win season ultimately being, you know, a huge success and something that would, you know, keep Rich Rod in that seat as head coach for us. And I think we're still sitting there at the moment. Something that has changed is that obviously we got a new athletic director with Greg Byrne moving over to Alabama. Dave Heckey had had come over from Central Michigan and has really embraced the football program and is looking to move some major projects forward that, you know, have kind of been in the wings for a while, which, you know, one of them, at least the big one for Arizona fans, is going to be the indoor practice facility that we've desperately needed for a long time, especially being out in the middle of the desert. So I think that it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the season plays out and kind of what card Dave chooses to pull, just based on the fact that, as you guys had mentioned, there is waning support with the ASU program. You know, potentially Todd Graham could be you know, fired any week if they continue to have the results that they have. And then that kind of you know, pits us squarely against you know, that program to try and secure a head coach. And another interesting tie, too, is that as the AD, he also has some close ties to Butch Jones over Tennessee. So, again, I think there's a lot in play, and I think for Arizona fans, a 6-7 win season would ultimately be the goal, and we're pretty, I would say, fairly optimistic considering the results that we've had so far. But there's a lot to uncover, and we'll see how it plays out.
Well, Rick, honestly, the answer to that question has made me have so many more questions to begin with. But I'll just jump to this one. You know, I've heard some other interviews where, you know, based on the new athletic director, that maybe there's a little bit more loyalty to the coaches and that Rich Rod's not on as hot of a seat as possible. You mentioned a 6 or 7 game win season would probably save his job. How hot is that seat, and how likely do you feel that bowl eligibility is going to happen?
Well, I think we're in a position moving into the game against you guys where there's a lot of unknowns. You know, I think that the competition that we've played thus far, while we pretty much beat down NAU and had our way with UTEP, I would state that, you know, NAU and UTEP are pretty low-skill opponents, and really we didn't learn a whole lot about those games. You look at the Houston game, and you know, our game against Houston ended up us getting beat 19-16. But at the end of the day, you know, a lot of Arizona fans, I feel like, are you know, we're hoping that Brandon Dawkins would come to play and have a much better game than he actually did. He was actually responsible for 2 fumbles, which, you know, really killed us and led to 10 points in terms of points off turnover. So that was a huge swing for us. So I think we very well could be 3-0 right now, and are now at 2-1. And then you kind of look at, you know, in terms of Rich Rod and that hot seat that you talk about, you look at the external factors that come into play. And I would say that, you know, the U of A fan support has never been great when it came to football. I mean, as you guys know, we're ultimately still going to be a basketball school unless we have, in my opinion, some long success in terms of football and a winning season, you know, 7-8 wins. But at the end of the day, I think that although the AD has changed, and there may be that at least growing sentiment outside the program that, you know, the AD is behind his guys and behind the coaches that we currently have, you know, football is a really bad sport to be bad in. And ultimately, You know, I think that there's going to be a change in regime if it looks like the program has continued to stall and continue to go backwards as it looks like it has since the Fiesta Bowl. So I would say that right now it's about 50-50 if I was going to give it some odds, and that's basically because we don't really know what we have as a team yet. And I think that this game is vitally important, at least from our standpoint, to figure out, you know, what kind of team we have and basically what position Rich Rodriguez is going to go in or going to be in moving forward throughout the season. And you know, if we, you know, keep him on board throughout the season, I would anticipate that we will definitely have a, you know, a 6-5 record somewhere in there, about 500. But I would say that if, you know, we start dipping and our schedule's tough moving to the next basically four or five games, you know, we could see him be dismissed end of September, early October if stuff gets bad. So we'll have to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I mean, looking at your schedule, you've got Utah, Colorado, UCLA. UCLA is not too bad at Cal, but Utah, Colorado, and then once you get past that in late October, you're going Washington State, USC. I mean, those are some tough games you're going to be playing, and we'll see what happens. I mean, it's a young team, and I'm just wondering, with all the freshmen playing and everything, let's start on the offense. What do you expect Arizona's plan of attack to be against Utah this coming weekend?
Well, I think offensively, and I'll kind of break it down a little bit more since you guys probably haven't seen us play too much. You know, really, our run offense leads to our passing offense. And, you know, the big, I guess, the talk of Tucson has been, is Brandon Dawkins a good enough passer to kind of get the job done? And we have a highly touted, high recruited freshman behind him named Khalil Tate that has had a shoulder injury actually coming out of the NAU game, didn't play against UTEP, but it looks like he's going to be available and ready to go for the Utah game. So we're interested to see from an offensive standpoint if the outcome of last week's game, which, you know, Brandon Dawkins basically missed only three of his total attempts. He only had 21, so it's not like he had a lot. But 18 out of 21, three touchdown passes, three touchdowns on the ground, and really drove the offense and led the offense to be a lot more explosive and a lot more productive than we had seen in the first two games, even though the NAU result was fairly lopsided. I think what we're going to do or what we're going to see is probably a lot of back and forth on the line. You guys, in terms of your front seven, is very, very strong, all the way from your defensive tackles to your defensive ends, and obviously your leading tackler, which is your middle linebacker. You know, I kind of look at this game as a struggle to see if Arizona can run effectively up the middle and then try and use some of that RPO action to kind of spread and use their speed on the outside to get the edge, and then also see if we can develop a downfield passing game. That is yet to be determined, and I think this is going to be a huge barometer for what we're going to be able to do against Pac-12 defenses this year, and if Brandon Dawkins has actually developed and matured to the point where he can read those defenses a little bit better and get the ball out of his hands a little bit sooner. One thing in watching tape that I'll just mention is, you know, we saw a very high completion percentage against UTEP, and UTEP's nothing to write home about. But if you watched some of those plays develop, his reads were a little bit slower coming out of his hand, and he would actually still stare down some receivers, and actually he's lucky that one didn't get intercepted, which was basically a 5-yard out. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, and I think if we can get the passing game going, it gives us a really, really solid shot against you guys, and for some reason they always tend to play well down at Arizona against Utah. So I'm interested to see what the offense does and to see if, you know, J.J. Taylor and Nick Wilson can get, you know, some nice yardage and chunk yardage if that passing game does develop.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're talking about the passing game. I mean, who do you think is going to be Arizona's go-to receiver at this point?
Well, it's interesting because at this point we have a sophomore receiver named Sean Brown. Actually, he's a junior, excuse me. He's got 8 receptions for 126 yards and 1 touchdown. I mean, we only have basically through our receivers 2 touchdowns this season thus far. So a lot of our ground attack has been used to score touchdowns. One thing that has been an interesting development and something that Rich Rodriguez hasn't done through, you know, the first 6 years here, we didn't see it much back in Michigan or at West Virginia, is implementation of the tight ends and now implementation of a passing game for the tight end, which provides them some big targets. And a lot of what we're seeing is either a tight end split out or a tight end brought basically onto the line, and then we're seeing usually 5 to 10 yard intermediate passes. So Bryce Wolma, who you talk about our youth, is another freshman for us. He's got 11 receptions for 79 yards and a touchdown, basically in about a game and a half. So we're seeing a lot more from that group, and I would anticipate that as we try and get Brandon Dawkins into the flow of the game and see if we can try and sustain some drives. Those tight ends are going to be a key for us, and then we're going to try and, basically move the ball downfield with a, 15 to 20 yard, intermediate passes every once in a while just to try and open things up. So, we're pretty light in terms of our receiving core, but I would anticipate that we're probably going to see, if we can get the passing game going, a nice spread between about 3 or 4 guys, within that group.
What did Houston do to basically hold Arizona to 16 points? It seemed like, just kind of looking at the stats, they really kind of shut them down a little bit. What did Houston do that was giving Arizona trouble?
Well, I think, and this is what I'm concerned about for you guys, is if you look at the interior defense, specifically the defensive tackle, Oliver is a guy that just kind of blew up our offensive line. And to this point, I think what we're, from an offensive line standpoint, what we're sorely lacking is that push and that drive off the line to really open up, run pass offense, and really open up kind of that delayed draw game that we utilize with some of our smaller scat backs in that zone blocking scheme. So I think when you talk about the interior of that line, I think that's a major concern heading into play you guys, and whether or not we can get a push and open up some of those holes between the tackles to kind of open up the rest of the offense. I think the other thing you would notice in that game is Brandon Dawkins had a very hard time throwing the ball and hitting wide open receivers, on out routes. And whether he was sitting in the pocket or he was rolling out, his feet and his accuracy are kind of skittish and were not the best. And you could really tell by overthrows, underthrows, kind of leading guys into traffic on some bad reads. So, again, I think this team kind of goes how Brandon Dawkins goes. If he has a good game and makes some correct reads and also can figure out how to get himself worked into that passing game, I think it's going to be a very competitive, close game, and I think there's going to be some things open. If he has a terrible game, as he did against Houston, I think you kind of saw the result. I think our offense sputters, and we don't have a lot of those chunk plays that we rely on. And again, if your front seven can basically control that line of scrimmage and we don't see those holes open up, I think it's going to be a long night. So we'll see what happens.
Quick of a trigger, do you think they'd go to Khalil Tate? If he is struggling, how quick do you think they pull the trigger to make a QB change?
Well, I think Brandon Dawkins right now, and Rich Rod has echoed it, in publicly quite a bit. Brandon Dawkins is his ride or die quarterback this year, and he's either going to find a way to get us bowl eligible with him, or he's going to find a way to get fired. So one of the two is going to happen. I would look for Brandon Dawkins unless he gets hurt with another injury. And again, going back to that Houston game, something I left out was that they said he had injured his hands. If there is a significant injury that puts Brandon Dawkins in a detrimental position, I think they may pull him just to give Khalil Tate in there because I think Khalil Tate also offers, you know, that speed, not as quick as Brandon Dawkins, but I think he's a better pure passer. So we'll have to see how it plays out. But I would anticipate that Brandon Dawkins is going to be in there the entire game, barring any injury issues. And you know, we'll see how that plays out. But, again, it's all about how, in terms of offensive play calling, we're able to kind of get Brandon Dawkins in the fold and get the offense moving early. And if we can move the ball, I think it gives us a good chance.
All right. I mean, let's shift the focus a little bit here. We talked a lot about Arizona's offense. Let's talk about Arizona's defense. What would you see? Are there strengths or weaknesses, or what would you do if you were Utah trying to attack this Arizona D?
Yeah, well, first of all, we are one of the youngest defenses in the nation, and as a team, we've played 23 true freshmen. So if that gives you guys an idea of how young we are, it's pretty darn young. On top of that, I was just running some stats, and four of our five top tacklers at the moment are all true freshmen. And this comes from the secondary, and then this is also coming from our linebacker group. And it's really interesting in taking a look at this because our true freshman, Tony Fields from Nevada, and he's a starting linebacker, has 17 total tackles. So while that's a great sign that we're getting, a lot of our tackle leaders from, our linebacking core, including Tony Fields, it also worries me that we have four of our five best tacklers, as true freshmen. So I think this is going to be a really big test for us, especially when we're talking about going up, against your offense. And Tyler Huntley looks to be the real deal. And what really concerns me from a defensive standpoint is how are we going to limit the damage that he's going to do? I've seen him compared early on to Marcus Mariota and doing a lot of the things that Marcus Mariota did really well in terms of that run-pass offense. And I honestly could see you guys having a lot of success on the run, in the rushing game if we don't have, fairly decent contain by our ends and by our outside backers. I think what you guys will see from a defensive standpoint is we're blitzing a lot more than we did in Marcel Yates' first year as a defensive coordinator. A lot of what we're doing as well is disguising some of those blitzes and bringing up a safety and then dropping him back and coming from the other side with a cornerback. So I would anticipate that some of that is going to be used to help contain. From a passing standpoint, we have Flanagan Fowles is basically our leader. He's our safety. He's got three interceptions thus far this year. But we're also rolling out a true safety as well next to him. And then we're also rolling out a true freshman next to Jace Whitaker as the cornerback. So I think in terms of looking at the offense versus our defense, we basically have to try and limit Tyler Huntley from creating a whole lot of damage. And then, Carrington, has always scared me even when he was at Oregon. But now he looks like he's pretty potent and kind of the go-to within your offense. I would anticipate that we'll probably roll a cover two over to him and really, that could open up some opportunities in one-on-one coverage, for your other receivers who looks like they give you guys quite a bit as well. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But, yeah, I would anticipate that this is going to be one of those games where, these guys have to grow up quick and figure out how to get the job done or else it could get, ugly early if we let your quarterback, kind of run the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's it really sounds like this game could determine expectations and Rich Rod's job for the rest of the season. I'm curious then, based on that, I got, really what is two questions left. One, if you had to pick, three keys to the game, what would they be? And two, if you're willing, what is your prediction of what's going to happen in a score pick if you have one?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you hit the nail on the head. This game is going to come down to, it'll probably turn out to be one of the biggest games underneath the under the Rich Rod era, and not only for expectations, but I think there's a lot that we still have to find out about this team based off of potential and expectations of what we have. To me, it kind of seems like, you know, you guys, the Utes, are in the same sort of situation. I mean, on paper, it looks like you guys have a pretty solid team, and yet, you know, we've kind of played the same level of competition. You know, BYU, I think, is down. And so I think this is a huge game for both teams, and specifically for us and Rich Rod, in terms of, you know, what can we expect this season? Are we going to have a 4-8 season, or are we going to try and move, into, you know, potentially putting ourselves in a position where we can become bowl eligible with that 6th win? Regarding the keys to the game, I think our contain, again, you know, on the quarterback and, you know, in terms of your passing game and that RPO, is going to be crucially important to determining, you know, whether or not we can keep this close and try and pull it out. At the end of the day, it would appear that, you know, we have a lot of the tools and a lot of the good young freshmen that I think that can play. But, you know, it all depends on how we can limit the chunk plays and how we can, you know, best support our backers and our safeties in terms of, you know, trying to stop that passing game as much as possible. I think really what it comes down to as well is going to be, you know, how your defensive line or what your defensive line and your front seven, again, dictate to our offense and what we can, you know, do on that. If we have, you know, some solid blocking and we can, you know, create some of those holes, you know, up the middle, you know, through an ABC gap, I think that we're going to have a lot of success, and I think it'll help open up that offense. And if we can get Brandon Dawkins into a rhythm, I think it's going to help us kind of solidify that passing game a bit to move the chain. I think that we are a chunk yardage team, and it really has hurt us underneath the Rich Rod era to be a chunk yardage team when we haven't had, you know, continuous success. But again, if we can move the chains and be consistent and methodical, you know, with our offensive play, I think it'll put us in a good position and keep the defense off the field. Another big thing, too, I just want to touch on with you guys was special teams. And you guys are always solid in special teams. I think last year our special teams couldn't have been any worse. And I think we found some specialists that have really opened up the, you know, really provided some support and from a punt. From a punting perspective and from, you know, field goal kicking, we've really improved a lot there. And we also have a returning, you know, again, Sean Brown, who has 2 touchdowns on the year in punt return. So I think field position is going to be a really big one for us as well, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Given that, I, you know, looking at the line, it looks like it moved from 4 to 3.5. I think it's going to be a back-and-forth game. I think that you know, Utah will ultimately control the line of scrimmage, but I think it's going to be close. So I've got right now Utah at 28, Arizona at 23, and I think I'm going to stick to that, you know, even though I'd love to be a homer. I think that you know, I just see Utah as having too many weapons, and I think that you know, you guys will find some success in through the air against us and ultimately pull it out late.
Well, I will say I'm fine with your prediction. although your readers and listeners might not be the biggest fans of it, I'm fine with it. I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, maybe I should change that question because I feel like it's every game I ask that question, and the answer is it's ultimately like one of the keys is always battle of the trenches, right? And so, and I'm really intrigued to watch it. I think you hit the nail, hit on the nail with both of these teams have been playing inferior opponents, and who's, you know, it's almost like we got to answer Danny Green's questions. That, you know, who are they? You know, are they who we thought they were, and or whatnot? You know, so
exactly.
But, hey, Rick, you know, I really appreciate you coming on and giving a ton of insight. I've learned a ton about Arizona, especially having not watched a ton of their games, and look forward to a good game on Saturday.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Rick.
So let's go on. We're going to kind of backtrack now. I mean, that was a great interview. We've got about 10 more minutes left in the show, and we need to talk a little bit about San Jose State. And he put it on a real quick sentence. I feel like we had some offensive woes in the first half where we were all concerned. Twitter was a fire. But in the end, I mean, the offense produced. The score was pretty big. You know, I don't know if there's really much to complain about unless we want to get nitpicky. But what I will say was interesting is looking at the offense. So every week the Utes release their game notes, and I went and looked and pulled up the game notes after the San Jose State game last year, or three games before we started conference play, and I pulled up the one this year, excuse me, going into the Arizona game, and I thought there's some intriguing trends here. So the Utah offense, and let me know what you think, Andrew, as I'm going through this.
Yeah.
So Utah offense last year at this time was ranked 6th in rushing offense, 8th in passing offense, 8th in pass efficiency offense, 9th in total offense, and 11th in scoring offense. So, you know, there it is last year at this time of year. And then you get to this year, and in those same categories, right? So this year, rushing offense, 5th. Passing offense, 8th. Passing efficiency, 8th. Total offense, 6th. And scoring offense is 7th. And I think that last one right there really shows kind of the change in the offense. All the other rankings are really close. But now, instead of averaging 26 points a game that we were averaging coming out in all-conference play last year, we're averaging 37 points a game. I mean, technically it's 36.7. But this offense, as much as some people have definitely complained about what's been going on in certain parts, whether it be turnovers or the run game or whatnot, the offense is pretty close, except they're actually putting points on the board.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, base offense to me has been extremely impressive. I know there was obviously frustration at the start of the San Jose State game, but the fact of the matter is we're driving down the field. Almost every, you know, I may have to go back and look, but I can only remember maybe 1 3-and-out the entire game. The frustrating thing was last year there was way too many 3-and-outs. There weren't a lot of drives. And obviously against Arizona last year, if you remember, it was just a penalty fest. It was the first half of the Arizona game last year was the biggest crap show I've ever seen of an offense in my life with how many false starts they had. This year, Utah's driving down the field. It's frustrating that we've had to settle for field goals. But that second half of the San Jose State game, Utah was starting to put the ball in the end zone when they were in the red zone. And that was a big encouraging thing to me. Because it's like, you know what? They almost like had their demons where it was like, man, we get to the red zone, we can't put it in, we keep kicking field goals. But then it kind of seemed like they were starting to snap out of that. Tyler Huntley really started to look comfortable in the pocket, was throwing some great passes, especially to Carrington in the end zone. And it really started to seem that they were kind of getting out of that funk in the red zone. And that's encouraging. The BYU game was frustrating because that game shouldn't have been close, flat out. You know, I hate to be that guy, but Utah should have won by 21 points, honestly. I mean, and I was down at the stadium that day. And Utah was a much better team than BYU. It was the red zone issues. It seemed to me they were finally coming out of it a little bit against San Jose State. But
I think there was another issue. I think they were confused because BYU called it the blue zone. Maybe that's why they couldn't score.
Yeah, it could have been. It could have been. But ultimately for me, the thing that is so impressive is Utah is driving the football. The red zone issues are going to stop, especially as they go throughout the year and teams are starting to get wore down. Utah's going to start putting the ball in the end zone. But I love to see these drives. I love to see them. You know, no issue. Tyler Huntley gets out there, we're throwing a 15-yard out pass, then we're, you know, he's running for 12 yards down the sideline. Like, drives are happening. If drives are not happening, that's when there's worries. And so
yeah.
I expect Utah to put up a lot of points against Arizona, especially like what Rick said, how young they are with how many freshmen they got playing on there. Utah's going to be putting a lot of points on the board. The thing is, I don't think Arizona is going to be able to put point, you know, catch up. When I was going to ask him, like, do you feel like this game could be a shootout? But then I sit back and think, Utah's defense
is good. They're good. You know, and I may, you know, I'm not trying to act like a homer, but they are good. It's a good Utah defense. Maybe the best defense I've seen in the past several years, and that's saying something. And I know the woes that Utah's had against Arizona, but Utah's now used to seeing a running quarterback every day in practice. They got Tyler Huntley, who's running, who's probably just as fast as Dawkins is. He's a better passer. He's a better ball player. They're used to seeing this now in practice. They're running a similar offense. I expect Utah to really shut down Arizona's offense, and I'm predicting Utah wins by 14 plus.
Wow, I mean, it's interesting, and what I think we're going to see, and this is kind of the key that to the game for me is, you know, Rick mentioned that they're probably going to be shifting some kind of cover two or some kind of plan to shut down Carrington. So we're going to get to see what the rest of this receiver core is up to. What are they going to do? And how good is Huntley going through his progressions? You know, because he's going to look at Carrington. There's going to be two guys on him. What is he going to do from there? So, I mean, this is a really good game to see, you know, does this Troy Taylor offense really make the read so much easier for Huntley? And what will he do when Carrington's not there? You know, I was really encouraged each game. He's thrown it to more receivers. And so it's just a matter of time. But this Arizona game is going to be a good barometer of how good Huntley is. And that battle in the trenches, I just don't see how Utah loses it. I totally agree with you. Like, Arizona's going to get their chunk plays, but then I don't think they're going to get enough to win the game. But here's kind of the, call me crazy kind of question, right? After watching Marquise Blair play, is it possible that Chase Hansen is going to lose his starting spot to injury?
No, but I will say this, they will both be on the field a lot. It wouldn't surprise me to see them really start to, you know, bring Chase Hansen maybe up. I know he's already playing a hybrid type role of a safety linebacker, but Kyle Whittingham is famous for putting the best players on the field. And the way Blair is playing, he's not going to keep him off the field. Well, he's also not going to keep Chase Hansen off, who could be an All-American. They're both that good. So it would not surprise me to see them bring Chase Hansen up more in the box a lot more and utilize that speed with Blair. Chase Hansen's not going to lose his spot, but Marquise Blair is also not going to come out of the game. They will figure out a way to get those two on the field at the same time. This weekend, absolutely. If Chase Hansen's healthy and he's going to play, we don't even know that yet. Chase Hansen will be the starter. But I guarantee you that Blair will be out there in some sort of capacity, because I can tell you right now, Utah coaches are – they're going to be rushing four guys, counting on those four guys, and they know they'll shut down Arizona's running game with the front four. Now, the thing that – he said, what I guarantee you, Arizona's going to try to come out, they're going to come out passing, because they know that Utah is going to shut down the running game. So the only way they know that they're going to beat Utah is in the air. Well, that's where you're going to see guys like Blair and Chase Hansen on the field at the same time to shut down that passing game. And I see them doing that. I think it's going to be a tough road for Arizona this week. I don't think Arizona scores more than 16 points. That's my guess.
So let's hear 16 plus 14. So you're saying we're going to have a 30-16 game.
My prediction was 34-16.
Okay, 34-16. I'm going to go with 28-13 personally. Either way, both wins for Utah. We got Rick, who's the Arizona expert, saying Utah's going to win this game. So hopefully we're all right. We'll be coming in celebrating next episode. You know, we got about a minute left. I want to give you guys a little heads up. We know there are a lot of new Utah fans. So one thing we're going to start doing is we've got @RaiderU on Twitter, who's a Utah enthusiast, and he knows his history. So, you know, we're going to start having him come on weekly and give us a lesson on Utah history. The other thing I want to let you guys know is, look, you know, the world operates on algorithms. Facebook, Google, and it includes iTunes and all your podcast catchers. So if you guys could go give us a review, hopefully a positive one. It's okay to click on 5 stars. Give us a review. It would help us tremendously in showing up in these algorithms so that people can find us and hear more about Utah Utes football. And thanks for coming on, Andrew, and everyone, go Utes.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Network. Find us on Twitter @UteTalk Podcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.